Welcome to the Unbound Healing Podcast. I'm Anne-Marie Garland, nutritional therapist and health coach at Grassfed Salsa, and with me is my co-host Michelle Hoover, certified nutritional therapy practitioner and writer of everything you'll find at Unbound Wellness. Here we share everything about overcoming health challenges from autoimmunity to hormone imbalance and more, with holistic living, mindset shifts, practical tips, and a real food paleo approach. Remember our disclaimer, the content within this podcast is intended to provide general information and is not to be substituted for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Now let's get on with the show.
Here we go. How are you doing this week?
Wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm good. This week has been busy. This past week, it's been a lot of things.
And yeah.
You've
been super busy.
Oh my gosh. I finished up the first round of Gut Health Overhaul Live. So we finished up our first live coaching group. It was amazing. It was so awesome to work with everybody one-on-one. And part of the package is that I talk to people in the beginning, at the end, and the end, they get the 30-minute one-on-ones, and then they get live coaching in between their group calls. And it was just so amazing talking to people in week one and then week six and just hearing all the changes they experienced both mentally and physically. It was awesome. So I'm not going to be opening it up immediately. I need a minute to, you know, just reset to be able to give the next group my all. I don't want to go from one into the other without kind of stepping back and, you know, taking a minute. So just keep an eye out for the next time I open up that group coaching, hopefully sometime soon. And if you don't want to wait or you don't really want to do group coaching, but you're interested in the content, my gut healing program, it's a 6-week thing and you can do it self-guided, guthealthoverhaul.com. But yeah, it was super fun. And then there's just 1,000,004 other things going on. We're on St. Patrick's Day is coming and Easter is coming and summer is coming. And I'm just like, all the stuff is things, but it's all good stuff. It's all fun. I love this time of year. So
yeah,
those are my updates.
Yeah. Speaking of summer, James and I are talking, it's so far in the future still, but we are already talking about how we're going to celebrate Gigi's first half birthday, which he thinks until she's, because she was born on Christmas, we want to do like some type of like special Gigi day for her half birthday. Maybe not like gift related. Maybe it'll be something where she's like giving to people, but something special. He thinks we should wait until she's a little older, but I kind of feel like we should just start it because it's also going to be for us to help.
Sure. Someone. Yeah. It's for you too. Totally.
Yeah. Anyway, that'll be this summer. So we're already kind of excited for summer.
Yeah. I love when the seasons change. It's just feels like such a fresh start.
I know.
So invigorating feeling that. So I love this time of year. Do you have any other updates?
Yes. So I've been working behind the scenes on my detox ebook that I'm putting together. And it's, if you aren't familiar, it's a 12-week program where, well, it's actually 10 weeks that you can follow. And then there is a mindset detox as well that you can, it's like an optional portion of it that you can follow. It makes it 12 weeks. And it's just ebook guided. So it's pretty simple. Just takes you week by week, follow these steps each week to make it not so stressful in like detoxifying and cleaning out your life. So I've been working on that and it's so interesting to me. Like I've talked a lot here about how diet is such a small portion of the detox process. And there are so many other factors that you need to look at in your life, like the chemicals that you're putting on your body and the things that you're like sitting on every day and breathing in and all of these things like that, that we don't really think about. And to put it into perspective here, 2 out of the 10 weeks are focused on food, on diet, and the others are all focused on other aspects of your life. And my diet portions of the ebook, just the starting portions were like 6 pages, and the skincare, just one, like I have body skincare and then I have face skincare. Yeah. The skincare section is 13 pages. So it's like over twice as long. And that's just to start with. So just kind of goes to show there's like other things in your life aside from food that it might be impacting your health that you want to look at.
So this ebook sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'm super, super excited about it. I'm actually taking I'm opening here in a couple of weeks enrollment for my group coaching for my online programs. And we are going to use this group because the way I have mine structured is like once you become a group coaching member, you can come into any of the future coaching sessions.
Cool.
Like it's like a lifetime membership. So the different recording sessions get recorded, and then you can watch them like previous coaching sessions that were like have already taken place. And so each time we do it, each season, it's a new topic. And so this topic, I decided we would focus on detoxing and kind of use this group as like a beta tester for the detox ebook. So,
yeah. So
if you're interested, that's kind of a way you can get a hand in helping me figure out like exactly how it's going to work, and you can test it out and give me feedback and all of that. So I'm super excited to share that. So just trying to get it all ready for those people. And then the ebook will probably launch in the next couple months.
Awesome. I love ebooks.
Yes.
Can't wait to see yours.
So. Yeah. Ebooks are super fun for me because I love designing them.
Your ebooks are beautiful.
Thank you.
I get to see this one, right?
Yes.
I'm like, I want it. You're telling me all this stuff. I'm like, I need to see it.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I'll print it. I'll test it for you. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it I've already done, of course, but like,
yeah.
Some things it's just kind of a good refresher of like, oh yeah, I need to focus on this again and all of that. So I'm excited.
100%. Cool. So what are you loving this week?
So this is super random, but last week we talked about all the crazy things that were happening with my house. So James and I have been exploring the possibility of moving to a different part of Austin, closer to his job and closer to my interior design job, actually moved down there as well. So it seems very timely, and we can't actually afford to live in this part of Austin typically. So
Austin's so expensive.
Yeah. So we've been exploring the possibility of building a container house.
I saw you wrote a note for container. I was like, is she going to talk about the container store? I am so excited. Oh my goodness. That itself is just, oh wow.
So we don't know if it's going to financially be possible. We know we can afford to buy land down there. It's just like the building costs and getting qualified for a construction loan and all of that. So there are a lot of pieces that have to fall in place, but mm-hmm. I do have an interior design background. So the thought of being able to work with a new medium, like shipping containers and having it be such a like recyclable, like green building opportunity.
Yes. And
all of the products that we would put into the house would be low VOC or no VOC, eco-friendly. All of it is just really exciting for us. And also the thought that these would I haven't seen studies on this, so I hate putting it out there, but I would guess that because these containers are built to withstand like freight across the seas, that they would be completely watertight and we wouldn't have to worry quite so much about mold being an issue, at least not from the exterior.
Yeah.
If we end up going through with it, I will definitely be documenting the whole thing, and I might put it on like a different blog. I'm not sure if it really fits in with mine, but maybe.
Well, throw it in there. People like that. I would like it. You know, just little things here and there. I'm sure everybody would love to read about it.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep you guys updated. Again, this is like super preliminary.
We
have no idea if it's going to work or not, but we're hoping it does.
Yeah. I'm hoping it does for you too.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay. Let's get into today's questions.
We got good questions this week.
Yes. We're starting out with kind of a broad level one, so hopefully anybody could benefit from this information.
Want me to
go ahead and read it? This one comes from Laura. She says, I have been loving your Insta feed as I'm navigating so many health issues. One thing you mentioned was finding a functional doctor and naturopath. I'm in Waco and there aren't any here yet. Can you recommend
Waco, Texas, by the yes. way? Waco, Texas is like between Austin and Dallas, where Anne and I live. I live in Dallas.
Right.
She lives in Austin. It's like the middle. You may recognize Chip and Joanna Gaines.
Magnolia.
Yeah, that's totally. Just wanted to give that.
Good one.
Can you recommend any in Austin or Dallas? I saw your recommendation about functional medicine doctors in Dallas. Do you know of any in Austin? What about naturopath recommendations? I don't even know what a naturopath is. I appreciate so much your help and sharing your story. So I thought I would talk real quick about the difference between a functional medicine practitioner and a naturopath. And yeah. honestly, they're pretty similar. I did some research just to make sure that I wasn't giving any like incorrect information here, but a functional medicine, both of them look at the body as a whole and everything kind of being interconnected. So like your symptoms all leading back to a root cause, as opposed to a, like this doctor needs to help you with this issue and this specialist needs to help you with that issue because they aren't related at all. So that's kind of the way the traditional medical system works, is like you have different doctors focusing on different areas, but nobody looking at the links between all those different symptoms. Functional medicine doctor and a naturopath both look at all of those symptoms being interconnected, leading back to one root cause. And so with functional medicine, they're going to be a conventional medical doctor and they will have additional studies and certification in functional medicine. So it's like an additional certification that they get. And then they often focus on preventative care rather than disease treatment. So that's another thing that like conventional doctors, you may be seeing your conventional doctor for an annual checkup. Functional medicine is going to look a lot more at like preventing disease long-term rather than just coming to this doctor when you have something flaring up. And they'll often utilize conventional medicine with an additional focus on gut health through diet and treating gut health, but also utilizing conventional medications and prescriptions and things like that. Then a naturopath is just takes it, in my opinion, like slightly one step further. So they do a lot of like self-healing and natural treatments. So things that are a little bit more like crunchy, like spirituality, homeopathy, which is something that a lot of people, I don't know, it's kind of a polarizing topic. Some people don't believe in it. Manual manipulation. So they just take it like one step further. Now, a naturopathic doctor, I feel like that's a... like, do they still have a conventional medical degree? And is that like another thing that they get on top of that? Or is it a different?
I'm not 1,000% sure.
I was thinking that a naturopath was actually an entirely different course of schooling. So
that's the impression I've always been under. I've got to say that I haven't looked into this a ton, just because I feel like even if you've seen one functional medicine doctor versus another, they could be so different and they could have gone to a different school that, yeah, people ask this a lot, like, well, what's the difference? To me, it's whoever resonates with you, whoever you've read reviews on that gives a good, you know, good quality care.
That's a good point.
Yeah. To me, that's the main thing. But no, I think that you've definitely answered what's the difference between a functional medicine doctor and a naturopath.
Yeah, overall, so they're pretty similar, but slightly different. And then ways to find them. Michelle put that you can do like a Google search, which I actually think is a really great idea because you might get some testimonies from bloggers mm-hmm. or people with websites. Going to Yelp is a really great, that's where we found our daughter's pediatrician. We've been really, really impressed with her was through Yelp. reviews. Yeah.
What I do with Google and Yelp is I will go and write in the beginning when I was trying to find an endocrinologist that actually did something with Hashimoto's rather than just hypothyroidism, I went to Yelp and typed in endocrinologist Hashimoto's or doctor gut health, doctor stool testing, something like that. And then you'll ping up testimonies and reviews from people who say, hey, I saw Dr. Steve and he gave me a stool test and that was so helpful. You know, you start to see people like, okay, these are people that I can relate to. These are people that have dealt with issues that I've dealt with. And they saw this doctor. So that's the easiest way that I think that anybody can just get started. Google as well. Usually doctors will list, you know, services on their website, what they specialize in. Going to Google and typing in, okay, I live in Milwaukee, I want a functional, you know, doctor. And I would type in like Milwaukee Dr. Candida, something like that. I want somebody to help me with Candida. But really, that's the kind of stuff that I search.
So, well, another place to look at here too that might get you coverage through insurance, but maybe somebody that's a little bit more willing to look at you as a whole picture, is looking for a doctor that focuses on integrative medicine. So that would be another search term to look for, like integrative medicine doctor, and just seeing kind of what offerings you have in your area.
Yeah. Do you want to go into that? And then I want to say something about insurance.
Yes. There's IFM.org is another place that you can find a functional medicine, certified functional medicine practitioner. So there's a find a practitioner link at the top right corner of that website.
Something that I wanted to add really quick, just because I feel like this will be a lot of folks' follow-up question as we are discussing a functional medicine doctor, or naturopath, just kind of this whole holistic medicine thing is, well, why don't they take insurance? I hate this doctor. He doesn't take insurance. So people always say, why don't they do this? Like, why don't these two things work together? And it's not necessarily the doctor's fault that they're not taking insurance. Insurance is something that is very heavily tied to conventional medicine. So you'll see that when you go to, let's say you get a cold and you get a antibiotic that you need, and you go to Walgreens or wherever and they tell you, oh, well, this one's covered by your insurance and this one isn't. It's because these insurance companies are super tied in with conventional medicine and different drug companies, and it's very much a conventional thing. It's not so much a holistic thing. So it doesn't make sense for functional medicine doctors to work with insurance because it's so tied to this conventional medicine system. It's not because they're trying to be mean or take more money. It's because it just doesn't make sense. So people will ask sometimes what I think is a good, better way if, you know, well, I'm paying for insurance and I'm paying for functional medicine, how am I supposed to afford both? And I think both of us now, I don't have conventional insurance because of this reason, partially because I'm self-employed and it would be $1 billion for me to get conventional insurance. But even when I had conventional insurance, when I was through an employer, I would go to the conventional doctor once in a blue moon to get like an annual checkup, and it would knock my copay down a little bit. But everything else, I was doing functional medicine, I was paying out of pocket anyway. So I do a health share now. The one that I do, it's called Christian Healthcare Ministries. There's also one called MediShare. There's a lot of different ways. And it's really just something to look into if you're at this dilemma of, I want to find a functional medicine doctor, but I can't afford insurance and a functional medicine doctor. I think that health shares are a good secondary thing to look into when you're looking for a doctor. And then last thing, she said, you know, I saw your recommendation about functional medicine doctors in Dallas. Where you can find that information on my website, if you go to unboundwellness.com and tab over to the about section, on my just menu bar, there's an FAQ where I list some recommendations. So,
yeah. Wonderful. Yeah, we actually switched to a health share after you had mentioned it. We started looking into it and it's pretty awesome. So as of this year, we are on a health share as well.
Yeah. I mean, awesome. I haven't really had to use it yet, but.
Yeah, I really like that. Like you are, the money that you're putting into it is not just going to make some big corporation money, but it's going to actually help people who need to utilize that money.
Exactly.
It's just kind of a great feeling.
It is. It's a, and you can get catastrophic insurance through it as well. So I know that's a big concern, but yeah.
And one thing that I wanted to mention too, is if you are feeling like it's not worth it to invest in a functional medicine doctor, a book I would recommend is Chris Kresser has a new book out called Unconventional Medicine. And if you maybe aren't a reader, then you could even just research like some different podcast, like type in Chris or Unconventional Medicine, Chris Kresser podcast, and see different interviews that he's been on where he talks about it, because he gives a lot of compelling reasons on why it makes sense, even financially, to go see a functional medicine doctor versus a primary care physician.
Cool. Good recommendation.
Or in addition to, maybe not in place of.
Cool.
Okay. Next question. I can read this. So Chloe says, my first major health issue started when I was 14 to 15 years old. I was suffering from chronic migraines to the point where I had to miss school frequently and could only alleviate my pain by sleeping. I tried allergy tests, went on extreme medication, and after some horrible side effects, I quit the medication, left only to treat with 600 milligrams of Aleve as often as I could take it. Eventually, I turned to acupuncture, and after just 6 treatments, my migraines stopped. It was the most amazing thing I ever did. At the end of high school, I was having frequent bleeding in between periods and suffering from some skin issues. My gynecologist diagnosed me with PCOS and put me on hormonal birth control that I still take. I'm now 23 years old and in generally good health. I've had a lot of issues with birth control, including highly acidic saliva causing cavities, gut issues, and overall, it is not effectively treating my PCOS symptoms anymore. I would really like to stop taking it and try to cure PCOS through more holistic methods, but am unsure if that is possible. I also think that I'm suffering from adrenal fatigue, but understand there's no real way to test for it. I have a high-stress job working in an inner-city school, and I'm sure that that is a large reason why I'm having a hard time feeling well lately. I always feel extremely exhausted even after a full night's sleep and healthy food and exercise. I'm having a hard time dealing with temperature regulation, getting quality sleep, and am experiencing a host of skin issues. No rashes, just dry, dull, and some acne. My family has a history of autoimmune disease, and when I started having less pronounced symptoms of thyroid issues, dry skin, hair falling out, fatigue, I had my levels tested. They came back normal, and my doctor told me that it was just that time in life, which I felt was absolute BS. I would like to get retested sometime soon to see if anything has changed, because many of my symptoms seem to fall in an autoimmune type category. Do you have any advice on how to holistically manage PCOS and adrenal fatigue? I regularly exercise, but it's made my fatigue substantially worse, and I've only been doing yoga. I'm a clean eater and trying to incorporate AIP foods, but have not fully transitioned yet. That being said, the few things I have changed about my diet have helped noticeably. I am far less bloated, if at all, after I eat, and generally feel like my digestion has gotten better. I am sure I still have a long way to go with gut healing from the birth control and all the NSAIDs I used to take, and would appreciate any tips for getting off birth control to continue healing. Why don't you go first? Because I kind of want to piggyback off of yours.
Yeah. Oh man, I feel for you, Chloe. It's really hard going through all these hormonal things, just because when you're going to a conventional doctor, they're only going to talk to you so much about this stuff. I just went to my gynecologist this week for, you know, just the yearly thing, and they asked me, oh, you have any concerns? You want to talk about anything? I'm like, not really. I have another doctor that I talk to this stuff about. So I understand your concerns of just, this is hard trying to do all this stuff on your own. I totally get it. So First and foremost, what I would back up with is kind of to our last question of, are you working with anyone to do this stuff holistically? Because that we're going to throw out lots of recommendations and things to start to think about, but as far as actually figuring out 100% what's wrong with you, we'll talk about testing and other supplements that you can talk about. But the way that you take action with that is working with somebody one-on-one is so important. I had a lot of hormone issues, estrogen dominance. Obviously, I have Hashimoto's as well. And there's a ton I could learn online, but as far as tailoring it specifically to my needs, that came from working with somebody one-on-one. So also in that same breath, as far as getting off of birth control, we cannot tell you legally or ethically to ever get off of any sort of medication or give you advice. You know, here's how you get off this. We can't tell you to do that. It's working with somebody one-on-one. But what I can tell you is I dealt with a lot of this same stuff, thyroid issues, hormone issues, and I was on birth control and they told me that that was my only option. And I was able to get off of it, talk to the doctor about it, and made sure that I had a backup plan so I was not in, you know, severe pain when I did it, made sure I was doing it right. And I am very happy to be without it. So there are options. As far as managing PCOS naturally, here are the main ideas to think about. First and foremost is sugar control, blood sugar. That is the first place to start. That is questionably the hardest and the easiest. It's the easiest because you can start today just changing with what you're eating and your diet, how you're balancing things, but it's also the hardest because it's really hard to do that when it comes to sugar. So our hormone balance is heavily, heavily, heavily tied to our blood sugar. Insulin resistance goes hand in hand with PCOS, even diabetes. Elevated blood sugar, it's so tied in with PCOS. And one of the most effective ways to manage your hormones and really take control of that is controlling your blood sugar. If you go back to last week's episode, we talked about the adrenals, and I won't go into it again because it's kind of a long story, but I talked about the pregnenolone steel in there. And basically, if we're putting in all of this extra resources for our body to output stress hormones and other hormones to control our blood sugar, we're going to throw off the rest of our hormones. And that same thing with adrenals, which I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute, but blood sugar is incredibly important. And I will tell you right now, the most people that I work with one-on-one, myself included, we come into it saying my problem is gut health or Hashimoto's or hormones. And we really sit down and we look at all of the symptoms, all of the health history. It's like, no, your main burden is your blood sugar. So most people are dealing with this. You're not alone here, and it's really important if you have PCOS. We did an entire episode about blood sugar. You can go back and listen to that if you want more details, but what I'm going to skim over right now, controlling your sugar intake by, first and foremost, we don't know what you're eating, but making sure that you're not getting those processed and refined carbohydrates, those processed sugars. But if you have PCOS, one of the first things that you really need to be doing is looking at things like higher sugar fruits, starchier carbs. I'm not saying that these things are bad. I'm not demonizing them. But if you're trying to get to the bottom of what's going on here, it's important to test your tolerance to these. So pulling back on higher sugar fruits, so bananas, mangoes, sweet potatoes, plantains, things like that, pulling back and favoring winter squash or lower sugar fruits like berries, and then making sure that you are getting protein, healthy fats, and non-starchy carbs, meaning vegetables, at every single meal. You have to have a breakfast that is, you know, not just like a smoothie with a little bit of collagen, but no, a whole breakfast with chicken or an omelet or some smoked salmon, something like that, with avocado and vegetables. Really making sure that your meals are balanced, that you are eating enough healthy fat, protein, and vegetables. Really important. Something that I tell people to consider as they're trying to get a handle on this is getting a blood sugar meter. You can find a lot of instructions for how to do this online, how to actually track your blood sugar where it should be at. And that could be a good way for you to start to understand, okay, what is my blood sugar actually doing? What foods am I reacting to? It's really important. Next, making sure that you're getting enough vitamin D is also really important for your hormones. If you're working with a doctor, getting it tested, as well as your magnesium, is another really important one. Ways that you can get magnesium. One is Natural Calm is an easy one to just go buy at the grocery store. You can also do topical magnesium. A lot of people will do a topical magnesium into their feet. It is best absorbed there. As for vitamin D, the sun, obviously, first and foremost. Cod liver oil is another good way. Eating organ meats will give you tons of those nutrients as well. Omega-3s, really, really important if you're going through any sort of inflammatory disease. And I mean, most disease is inflammation based in some form. Omega-3s help you control your inflammation process naturally and give your body what it needs to anti-inflame. So making sure that you're eating things like fish, if you can have, you tolerate seeds. I don't know if you're on autoimmune protocol or anything like that, but if you tolerate seeds, that's a great place to get it. But really focusing on getting fresh fish, salmon, sardines, things like that, several times a week. If you're eating sardines, you don't have to worry as much about mercury or anything like that. But as far as gut health, it's all out there. Anna's yawning. It's funny. I'm like, I'm just going on forever. And I'm
No. This baby has had like a sleep regression.
I know, but it's funny as I'm just like, blah, 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 blah. Just like yawning. Gut health is a whole other topic. We have a podcast on that as well. So I would go back and listen to that. The main thing that I really wanted to get across is the sugar and those nutrients. And as far as stress and adrenals, that is also an enormous factor with your PCOS. If you go back and listen to last week's episode, we talk about that a ton. And it may be hard to test your adrenals for sure, but there are ways to test it. We talked about it last week that you can do saliva tests, urine tests, even those are helpful. There are ways that you can start to figure it out. And you want to think about emotional stress. Job stress is really important to think about. Really important to kind of consider your options, consider what are the highest stressors in your life, what is it that you can change. So emotional stress, you know, changing how you look at things, changing things in your life that are just too unnecessarily stressful. And then you didn't talk about exercise or anything like that, but it's just always worth mentioning. Exercise, stress from exercise as well, over-exercising is really not helpful in a state of PCOS. But that's a lot of stuff. Do you have anything?
Yeah, I wanted to bring up that you said your doctor said that you were just fine, your symptoms were all fine, in regards to thyroid symptoms. So I would find out what they actually tested for, because depending on who you went to, they may not have given you like a full thyroid panel. So what that would include is your TSH, free T3, free T4, reverse T3, antithyroglobulin, and TPO. And the last two there, the antithyroglobulin and TPO and ANA could help indicate Hashimoto's. Mm. So those would be things that you want to make sure they covered all of that. And also, were you like just fine? Your levels were all just fine, like in a conventional sense or in a functional range? Because that's another thing. The functional range is a lot tighter than what conventional medicine doctors look at as being like within range of thyroid hormones. So that would be something to look at. And you have 100% every right to have access to all of your labs. So I know this is something that a lot of people feel uncomfortable asking for, but if you didn't get those, you can call the doctor's office and ask them for a copy of your lab work to be sent to you. And then with PCOS, it's likely that your estrogen is high, or you may have heard that you're estrogen dominant. So that would be something to look at also, see if your doctor has tested you for that. If she has, one thing to help manage that holistically would be a DIM supplement. And one that I like is called Estrosense. Again, you don't want to take this unless you know you have high estrogen and that you're constantly, you know, getting it tested so that you make sure that you aren't like overdoing it. But that's something that me, from when I was healing from PCOS naturally, something that personally helped mine tremendously was a DIM supplement. And it wasn't something that I noticed a difference in with like 2 months of taking. It was something that it was after a year of taking this supplement that I really noticed a difference. So it's something that I had to be on for quite a while. And then, like Michelle was talking about, controlling blood sugar is going to be really important. You could see if that's an issue for you by getting your A1C, hemoglobin A1C tested. Your doctor probably tested you for that. It's kind of a common one. So you could see if that's high, then controlling blood sugar really is going to be like top importance. And maybe even considering going on a lower carb AIP approach. And if you are estrogen dominant, then also focusing on like when you are eating carbs, making sure they're higher fiber carbohydrates. If you hear noises, it's just a little birdie learning to talk. Side note. So the other thing that I would recommend is Sarah Gottfried's book, The Hormone Cure. I loved this book. So that was one that I purchased when I got my PCOS diagnosis, and it's just like full of so much information. So we have that linked up in the show notes.
Awesome. Great advice. The final question is from Abby. And Abby says, I was diagnosed with mononucleosis in July of 2016. Ever since then, I have not felt the same. I had a terrible case of mono. I was in bed for months. I still to this day have spleen pain and chronic fatigue. I have been to the doctor and they did some testing and said I was fine and sent me on my way. I was not satisfied with that at all. I just found myself a functional doctor that will help me. So I'm so excited to finally get somewhere and feel like myself again. Anyway, the reason I'm emailing you is because I have a question about Hashimoto's. My cousin and aunt on both sides of my family have Hashimoto's. I know that because of this, I have a higher risk of having it as well, mostly because I'm also celiac. After doing some research, I found that there was a link between EBS or EBV or mono, Epstein-Barr virus, and Hashimoto's. I am still confused as to how they were linked and was wondering if you knew anything about this. Do you want me to go or do you want to go?
Sure, I can go. So one thing that you're talking about here is the link between EBS and Hashimoto's. So what that is referring to is something called epigenetics. So if you aren't familiar with this, people are talking about it. So I think it's important to understand what that means. Genetic factors of autoimmunity is just a small portion of whether or not you actually end up with that autoimmune disease. So an example would be there is a celiac gene. There are two celiac genes that you can have one of either of these genes to develop the celiac autoimmune disease, but only 3% of people with that gene actually develop celiac. So that's like a very, very small percentage of people that have the gene or the susceptibility to developing that actually get it. And it's because of epigenetics that celiac gene is turned on. So epigenetics are going to be the environmental factors or things that are kind of some within and some without being within our control. So some things are within our control is like the food you eat, the toxins you're exposed to, and then things that are not within your control are things like mono. So different illnesses can turn on autoimmune genes. Mm-hmm. So 100% yes, EBS could trigger Hashimoto's. Now, again, I would recommend getting a full thyroid panel, just what I answered for Chloe's. So those would be the tests to go to your doctor and specifically ask for those tests. A lot of conventional medicine doctors are not going to run all of those tests unless you specifically ask for them, especially the TPO antibodies, antithyroglobulin, and ANA. And if you get those tested, then that can rule out Hashimoto's for you. And then you're probably dealing with a huge viral load, which is why you're still not feeling better after mono. And so Michelle's going to go into some viral treatments that you can focus on. I agree with everything that she's going to bring up. One additional one to look at is something called systemic enzyme therapy. It's actually something that I just learned about, and it's really, really interesting. So one of the reasons why some things like mono are so hard to get rid of is because they have something called a capsid, which is the virus has like this shell on the outside. Humans do not produce enzymes to break down that shell to actually eradicate the virus. And so something called systemic enzyme therapy could be helpful in getting rid of it. And in this case, you would do a proteolytic enzyme, which is an enzyme that acts on protein, because that is what the mono viral capsid, the mono shell, is a protein shell. So you need this specific protein to break down that shell and help get rid of that virus. So the brands to look at for this, I would recommend Enzymatica. And that's one that I've mentioned before, digestive enzymes, but in this case, you would want to look for a proteolytic enzyme by Enzymatica, and that's a protein enzyme. So you could just do a little Google search for that. And it would also be worth your time, I think, in running a Google search for a proteolytic enzyme therapy for mono and see what's out there. Could also be something that you would bring to a functional medicine doctor and see if they're familiar with anything that works really well for that. Okay, what do you have to share?
I agree with all of that, exactly. As far as other treatment options, which you'll be working with a doctor one-on-one, and that's great. These are some things that I would do some research on, bring up. IV therapy to get rid of something like Epstein-Barr, so IV therapy for vitamin C is something that I've worked with people who have done before, and I have seen people kind of come at this point where you are and be able to see a huge reduction. So there is hope. IV therapy is a good one for sure. Prescription antivirals. I know it's not always ideal to take things like that. A lot of times we want to do things holistically, but honestly, it's just, it's sometimes you just got to do it. Oregano is another one that is a good one to look at as far as antivirals. Colloidal silver is another really good antiviral. That's something that you can take low doses of. It's pretty cheap. It's one of the things that when somebody around me has the flu, I'm afraid of getting sick, I will often kind of mega dose on that, and it's really helpful. Something that's important to just keep in mind is when you're killing a virus like this, it a lot of the times gets worse before it gets better. So you want to be sure that you're coming in with that expectation that there could be kind of a healing reaction, and don't let that deter you. Don't let that, you know, make it feel like you're doing something wrong. Hopefully your doctor will go over all of this with you, but it can be hard to get rid of these things. But like I said, there's 100% hope to do it.
Wonderful.
Those are some good questions.
Yes.
I feel like a lot of people have questions like this, so I'm excited we got to cover these. Thank you, ladies, everybody, for sending these in.
I agree. Also, I just wanted to add this systemic enzyme therapy that I mentioned that I fairly recently learned about was something that you could look at for a variety of different viral infections. So it's not just mono. So again, you would just do systemic enzyme therapy for whatever viral treatment you're looking for. And also, it's why Candida is also difficult to, just like a side note, it's also why Candida is so difficult to get rid of, is because we don't have the enzymes to break down their cell wall. And that's why MCT oil, being really high in caprylic acid is what helps break down those cell walls and why it helps the, you know, eradicate Candida so efficiently. That's it. What's your meal of the week?
I've been digging sweet potato toast recently.
Yes.
I've been on a Whole30 right now. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll see that. And I don't know what it is. It's not like I was eating grain toast before. Ever since I've been on the Whole30, I've been really digging sweet potato toast. I usually do it in the oven, then I'll just slice it thin. And it's hard to say how long I cook it for. It depends how thin I sliced it. Usually I just check on it like a ton and flip it a lot. And I've been eating it with avocado on it, bacon, egg yolk. Maybe I'll do like a chicken sandwich with it. That's what I had the other day. I had two sweet potato toasts and avocado, bacon, and chicken.
Like, I love it.
Sandwich. It was really good.
I haven't had sweet potato toast in so long. I should hop back on that train.
It's good. It is really good. It's a nice vessel for all of the things that you can't, you know, eat on real toast.
Well, in the last few weeks of our listener questions, we've kind of gotten through a lot of what we had. So if you guys have any additional questions for us, go ahead and send them to unboundhealing@gmail.com and we will get them on our list.
Rad. Have a great week, you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Unbound Healing Podcast. Be sure to subscribe in iTunes and leave us a review. Until next time, you can find more from me, Anne, at grassfedsalsa.com, and more from Michelle at unboundwellness.com. We'll see you next week. Bye.